died for thee. Let's go to 2 Samuel, chapter 13. I've started on a little bit different take. Basically a parenthesis in my messages that I'm doing, my Sunday school. I just want to deal with some secondary characters in the Bible. These are not the main show. You read the Bible, you get a sense of the important people in the Bible, and yet there's a lot of people on the side that don't get the main emphasis, and yet they have very significant stories. And the fact is, this book, it just will blow you away if you read it carefully and with a little bit of faith. Now, if you read it with a lot of doubt, you're going to struggle with it. And there's a lot of people who read it with doubt. But if you read it with a little bit of faith, just give it the benefit of the doubt. Let it speak to you. I'm telling you, it just blows you away. This is the best literature ever written. Whether it's fiction or nonfiction, it doesn't matter. This is the greatest literature ever written. And I just do believe it's trustworthy. Now, there are some parts in the Bible that I cannot explain. It looks to me like there's a discrepancy or a contradiction or what have you. But there's been enough times where I thought there was a contradiction, and it turns out that the Bible was right on the money, that I've given up trying to fix it, trying to correct it. I would rather just say I'm not sure about that case, because I think sooner or later we're going to figure out it was absolutely right all along. And so don't give up on it too quick. But most of the Bible has been scrutinized so deeply that if there is any error in it, it's been fixed. It's been figured out a long time ago. And you could find the answer if you just struggle a little bit and try. But anyway, I want to deal with Absalom the next couple of weeks. So let's just start in chapter 13 of 2 Samuel, just to get the story to start with, and you'll get the gist of it, and then I'll go into some personal details about Absalom, and we'll try to get this underway. 2 Samuel, chapter 13, verse 1, "And it came to pass after this that Absalom, the son of David, had a fair sister, whose name was Tamar. And Amnon, the son of David," that's his firstborn, "loved her. And Amnon was so vexed that he fell sick for his sister Tamar, for she was a virgin, and Amnon thought it hard for him to do anything to her." You think? "But Amnon had a friend whose name was Jonadab." Don't you love friends? "Son of Shimeah, David's brother. Jonadab was a very subtle man, and he said unto him, 'Why art thou, being the king's son, lean from day to day? Wilt thou not tell me?' And Amnon said unto him, 'I love Tamar, my brother Absalom's sister.' And Jonadab said unto him, 'Lay thee down on thy bed and make thyself sick. And when thy father cometh to see thee, say unto him, I pray thee, let my sister Tamar come and give me meat and dress the meat in my sight, that I may see it and eat it at her hand.' So Amnon lay down and made himself sick. And when the king was come to see him, Amnon said unto the king, 'I pray thee, let Tamar my sister come and make me a couple of cakes in my sight, that I may eat at her hand.' Then David sent home to Tamar, saying, 'Go now to thy brother Amnon's house and dress him meat.' So Tamar went to her brother Amnon's house, and he was laid down, and she took flour and kneaded it and made cakes in his sight and did bake the cakes. She took a pan and poured them out before him, but he refused to eat. And Amnon said, 'Have out all men for me.' And they went out every man from him. And Amnon said unto Tamar, 'Bring the meat into the chamber, that I may eat of thy hand.' And Tamar took the cakes which she had made and brought them into the chamber to Amnon, her brother. And when she had brought them unto him to eat, he took hold of her and said unto her, 'Come lie with me, my sister.' And she answered him, 'Nay, my brother, do not force me, for no such thing ought to be done in Israel. Do not thou this folly. And I, whither shall I come? Whither shall I cause my shame to go? And as for thee, thou shalt be as one of the fools in Israel. Now therefore, I pray thee, speak unto the king, for he will not withhold me from thee.' Howbeit he would not hearken unto her voice, but being stronger than she, forced her and lay with her. Then Amnon hated her exceedingly, so that the hatred wherewith he hated her was greater than the love wherewith he had loved her. And Amnon said unto her, Arise, be gone. And she said unto him, There is no cause. This evil in sending me away is greater than the other that thou didst unto me. But he would not hearken unto her. And then he called his servant that ministered unto him and said, Put now this woman out from me and bolt the door after her. And she had a garment of divers colors upon her, for with such robes were the king's daughters that were virgins appareled. Then his servant brought her out and bolted the door after her. And Tamar put ashes on her head and rent her garment of divers colors that was on her, and laid her hand on her head and went on crying. And Absalom, her brother, said unto her, Hath Amnon thy brother been with thee? But hold now thy peace, my sister. He's thy brother. Regard not this thing. So Tamar remained desolate in her brother Absalom's house. But when King David heard of all these things, he was very wroth. And Absalom spake unto his brother Amnon, neither good nor bad. For Absalom hated Amnon because he had forced his sister Tamar. Well, they didn't leave out any of the details, did they? They're going to make sure we understand what's going on. And this is pretty lousy. This is pretty bad. Amnon was the firstborn son of David, prince, ready to be king. I'll get into that in a little bit. Just to let you know, Amnon was not allowed to marry his half-sister, according to Leviticus. Let's see, that's Leviticus 19, I believe, but it says you can't marry the sister of your the daughter of your mother. You can't marry the daughter of your mother or the daughter of your father. So it's very clear in the law of Moses, he can't have her. It's just this simple, and yet he just was smitten with her. He thought he loved her. And by the way, young people, this is one of the lessons. It's not one of the main ones I'm going to get to at the end of the Sunday school lesson, but one of the lessons that you could learn preliminarily right now is do not trust your emotions when it comes to love. Loving a young man or young men and young women, loving each other, forget it. That's not a really good reason to make any kind of decision in your life. You need a lot more other things. Now, it's nice to be in love. I mean, it's an enjoyable emotion and what have you. And if you're still in love with your wife, that's wonderful. I think that's a great thing. And it does happen. There is such a thing as this infatuation that really takes over. Yeah, it does happen. It doesn't always happen, but it does happen. And it's not an excuse if you've fallen out of love with your wife that you can't divorce her for that. That's just horrible, selfish thinking. You're more like this Amnon. I got the news for you. This firstborn son of David had no character. Can you tell? He just had no character. The guy, I just love my sister. She's so pretty. Beauty's only skin deep, folks. And it's true. She was a gorgeous girl, but he just was in love with her being gorgeous. And, he couldn't do anything about it. He just couldn't do anything about it. Why? It was forbidden. Couldn't do it. And even her, when she's trying to convince him to not force her, to not rape her, she says, look, if you just talk to the king, he'll work out a way. And it looks to me like Jonadab, his friend, was working out a way, because there's sort of an exception in the book of Leviticus. You can't have your father's daughter. You can't marry her, whatever. But there is an exception that if they lie together, then they have to marry. And so there's a solution. This is Jonadab, subtle guy. He says, I got a plan. All you got to do is seduce her. And if you seduce her, wow, man, then you're going to have her. She'll be yours and it'll be great. All the things are solved, whatever. But she wasn't seduced. She didn't get talked into it. So, wow. Then what do you do? Then he rapes her. And then he says, I don't really like her after all. Whew. Whew. Now, what do you think should have been done to this young man, Amnon? I know I'm a little bit extreme, but I think he should have been taken out and killed. Maybe stoned. Or hung on a tree, I don't know. I don't think Absalom was wrong to hate her. I mean, to hate him. I think he was pretty much justified. But we're going to get into some lessons about that. Let's just talk about Absalom for a second. This incident that happened in David's life destroyed Absalom as well as Amnon and as well as David. It messed up a whole lot of things. Now let's deal with it. Look at 2 Samuel chapter 3. Just go backwards a little ways to chapter 3. Let's get some preliminaries out of the way, what they call in the courts housekeeping. Got to set up the story a little bit. If you look at 2 Samuel chapter 3, in verse 1 says, "Now there was long war between the house of Saul and the house of David, but David waxed stronger and stronger, and the house of Saul waxed weaker and weaker." This is Saul's son Ishbosheth reigning at this time, and David is reigning in Hebron. "And unto David were sons born in Hebron, and his firstborn was Amnon of Ahinoam the Jezreelitess, and his second Chileab of Abigail, the wife of Nabal the Carmelite, and the third Absalom the son of Maacah, the daughter of Talmai king of Geshur, and the fourth Adonijah the son of Haggith, and the fifth Shephatiah the son of Abital, and the sixth Ithream by Eglah, David's wife. These were born to David in Hebron." Six sons plus Tamar born to David while he was reigning in Hebron. And the reason why, well, I'll tell you one thing. Amnon is mentioned again, and Adonijah is mentioned again. All of these are important in the story. This one called, what is he called? The second one is Chileab. He's also called Daniel in Chronicles. He was the son of this other girl, Abigail, the one that David took, the wife of Nabal. Anyway, that one is never mentioned again. Now, there's a lot of possible reasons why he's never mentioned again, but he obviously wasn't considered a viable candidate. Either he had died young, or he had some sort of disability, and he was not considered as part of the king's household as a viable member. So what we had here is a first and second order of sons, Amnon and Absalom. And Amnon falls in love with his half-sister, Tamar. Now, when you look at this, this is the order of it, how it comes in. You know, you're trying to put it all together and you try to see how it happened. This happened while they were in Hebron. And all of this other happened after they were full grown and he was already reigning in Jerusalem. So you're looking probably 20 years later when this other stuff happens. So Tamar and Absalom, they're in there. And maybe it's possible Tamar was older. It's possible Tamar was younger than Absalom. But one way or the other, she was pretty much full grown by the time all of this stuff happened. So you're getting your timeline in there and how it happens. And the reason why that's important when you're reading to get the timeline is because there's a lot of little details that will mess you up if you don't pay attention to them. For example, I was reading Adam Clark commentary. He's a Methodist commentator. He's got a lot of good suggestions and what have you for a lot of things. But on this one, he points out that it can't be. Something's really wrong. It's a horrible mistake in the original. Somehow there's something wrong because it says that Absalom was the daughter of Maacah, who was the daughter of Talmai of Geshur. Now, let me just point out something here. Look at 1 Samuel chapter 27, verse 8. 1 Samuel 27, verse 8. This is Adam Clark points this out. It says, "And David and his men went up and invaded the Geshurites and the Gezrites and the Amalekites. For those nations were of old, the inhabitants of the land, as thou goest to Shur, even unto the land of Egypt. And David smote the land and left neither man nor woman alive, and took away the sheep and the oxen and the asses and the camels and the apparel. And the return came to Achish, and then hid the fact that he had gone and killed every single man and woman and child in Geshur." But it says there was this king of Geshur that he got his wife from, and David married this Maacah, daughter of Talmai, king of Geshur. Well, now, that can't be possible. I mean, this is a discrepancy. This is the problem. And if you have a tendency to doubt what the Bible says, you're going to find all kinds of these problems. But if you just give it a little bit of the benefit of the doubt, pay attention to what it says there. It says, "This Geshur is as thou goest to Shur, even unto the land of Egypt." So there's David. He's up there in Hebron. And he goes down toward Egypt and invades the land of Geshur down there toward Egypt, kills them all. Now go to 2 Samuel chapter 15. It's a little bit after what we just read. And look at verse 8. This is Absalom speaking. He says, "For thy servant vowed a vow while I abode at Geshur in Syria." Huh. There's Hebron, there's Geshur near to Egypt, and there's Syria way up there. So, you get it. There's two Geshurs. It's all right there in the scripture. No contradiction. It's absolutely clear. In fact, Absalom went to Syria to be with his father-in-law. I mean, to be with his grandfather, I guess, when he was exiled. So it's very interesting how a good commentary, you go reading commentaries, and I suggest that you do. Commentaries a lot of times have a lot of good information, but you read the commentaries, too quick are they to find an error and say that it's a copyist problem or it's a problem with this, whatever, and they throw the actual text out and give you their conclusions about it, and their conclusions are wrong. Commentators are quite often wrong.
Right.
And quite often they don't do their complete homework. And they might have some good insight, but you got to take everything with a grain of salt. Now, let's look at some personal details. Look at 2 Samuel chapter 14, verse 25. This is an explanation of, or a description of Absalom. 25 says, "But in all Israel there was none to be so much praised as Absalom for his beauty." And remember, Tamar was very fair, very beautiful. "So from the sole of his foot, even to the crown of his head, there was no blemish in him. And when he polled his head, for it was at every year's end that he polled it, because the hair was heavy on him, therefore he polled it and weighed the hair of his head at 200 shekels after the king's weight." I don't know how much a shekel is and how much hair that is, but apparently it was pretty impressive to them at the time. This guy had a head of hair, and every year he would shear it, he would cut it short, and it would be 200 shekels, which they considered to be impressive. And that's every single year. They had a lot of hair. So, man, and he was good looking. I mean, this guy was a king's son. He was special. You'd think somebody that's that special and that has so much going for him and is second in line to the throne. I mean, seriously, second in line to the throne. He ought to have a little bit more composure about himself and maybe a little better sense of what's important in life. But anyway, he got himself in trouble over a little bit of revenge. Now, let's deal with a couple of things. Look at 2 Samuel chapter 14, verse 27. I stopped reading too soon. "And unto Absalom there were born 3 sons and 1 daughter, whose name was Tamar. She was a woman of a fair countenance." You remember his sister's name was Tamar. He had a daughter whom he named Tamar. You think he loved that sister of his? They obviously were pretty close, right? And it's interesting because these wives of the kings would be with the king, and they would have a couple of children with the king, and then basically they're set aside. Unless they happen to be a very favorite wife, they're set aside, and that's all. So it's very possible that Absalom and Tamar were the only two children of this woman, Maacah. And Maacah, of course, was a Syrian. She was from Syria, Geshur in Syria. And so they had a little different, you know, gods, whatever. And so they're a little bit set aside. They're not Jewish women. And so they have a tendency to hang together. They're protecting themselves in this royal court. And Absalom loved his sister, and he named his daughter after his sister. There's another point to be made. 2 Samuel 18 and verse 18. 2 Samuel 18, 18 says, "Now Absalom in his lifetime had taken and reared up for himself a pillar, which is in the king's dale. For he said, I have no son to keep my name in remembrance. And he called the pillar after his own name, and it is called unto this day Absalom's place." Now here's a little bit of detail that you didn't realize. He had 3 sons, but a little while later, he had no sons. You think something happened to his sons? Can you imagine losing 3 of your sons?
Right.
He had a hard life. This Absalom was going through something, and he says, "Now I have no son." And so he rose up a pillar and says, "I got to name it after my own son. I mean, my own name, because I have no son to carry on my." And so he really loved his daughter, and he loved his sister, and that's his family, and that's what Amnon messed with. Now, that's all interesting. A little while later, he's mentioned again. Absalom is mentioned again, you know, a generation later. And it's called, well, let's look at it. Look at 1 Kings 15, verse 2. Don't give up. It gets more interesting. 3 years, it's talking about, let's read verse 1. Now in the 18th year of King Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, reigned Abijam over Judah. Abijam is the son of Rehoboam. Rehoboam is the son of Solomon, who is the son of David. 3 years reigned Abijam in Jerusalem, and his mother's name was Maacah, the daughter of Abishalom, or in other places he's called Absalom. The daughter of Absalom's name was Maacah. Now that doesn't make a lot of sense, because if you look over there in, look at 2 Chronicles 13, verse 2. 2 Chronicles 13, verse 2. Says, it's the same statement. It's talking about Abijah. He reigned 3 years in Jerusalem. His mother's name was Micaiah, the daughter of Uriel of Gibeah. And there was war between Abijah and Jeroboam. This Abijah's mother's name was Micaiah, or Maacah, the same as his grandmother's name. And this Micaiah was called the daughter of Absalom. But I just want you to know, daughter doesn't necessarily mean one generation daughter. It could be a granddaughter. And it's almost certain that this was the granddaughter, because right here it says this daughter was the daughter of Uriel of Gibeah. This Maacah was the daughter of Uriel of Gibeah. And another place says the daughter of Absalom. So Uriel was the father. Absalom was the grandfather. And so he had a daughter, Maacah, very pretty, favorite wife of Abijam. Amazing. And this woman, Maacah, which was a granddaughter of Absalom, was the queen. And she actually, later on, you can read it, she actually had idols in a grove. And her grandson, Asa, or however that works, he had to depose her and get rid of her. Even she was an old woman, he got rid of her because she had idols in a grove. And that probably comes from the fact that these were Syrians. This is a Syrian little family over here. So Absalom has all these little issues in his life. Now, I don't know. Maybe this all plays into it. But I just want you to know the story is a lot deeper than just the cryptic part you can read. And even the part that you can read, you get all these details and you can find a lot of the details. And it becomes more interesting as it goes. It becomes a real story. And you have Absalom, who apparently, he had this favorite sister. He loved this girl and she's treated rotten. He has a daughter he named after, and then he loses all of his sons. So he is there. He's got a heavy load he's carrying. Then he gets into this situation where Amnon, his brother, rapes his sister. Now you just think about what all of this stuff happening to him and how it comes out. He loses his sons, has a daughter, he has his sister, and he's in his place. And then Amnon, you can imagine why he would hate this guy. I can imagine why Absalom would hate Amnon. They're not exactly close because they have different mothers. And there's some competition and they're sort of set aside. They're separated out. They have their own houses and their own little palaces. And so it's a complex situation. Polygamy is a horrible thing. Folks, if you haven't figured it out yet, it's a horrible thing. By the way, it's probably coming to America pretty soon. They've already got bills. They've already got lawsuits going on right now. They're working their way up to the Supreme Court to make polygamy legal. And then the Mormons can lord it over us and say, told you so, and that sort of thing. The truth is, polygamy is a horrible thing. And if we ever adopt it in America, folks, it's just going to be another step downward toward the pits. It's a horrible thing. So David had a lot of wives, and so his family life was in tatters. There's this conflict that he had with Amnon over a bad attitude that Amnon had, and such a selfish, pampered guy. He goes over to David and says, "I'm sick. I need my sister Tamar." And David should have had a clue and said, "You don't need your sister Tamar to take care of you and to make you cakes." I don't know what David was thinking. He obviously was not a hands-on kind of a disciplinarian and taking care of his kids. But if my kids had asked such a stupid thing, I'd have told them, you know, get a life. Stop acting like you can't handle it. And stop moaning around. And if you're sick, take it. Whatever. Not even going to give you medicine. Medicine's too expensive, right? My kids can testify. They can testify. And I'm not the only one. There's been a bunch of these missionaries been poor, dirt poor. Some of these missionaries were poor. We didn't go to the doctor for almost anything. If my kids were sick, I'd go to the vet. Anyway. Anyway. Can you see a couple of problems here in David not handling his kids? Now, I want you to notice, we read that part. It says over there in 2 Samuel 13, verse 21. Just want you to notice this. 2 Samuel 13, verse 21. Yep. Says, but when King David heard of all these things, he was very wroth. So what did he do? Nothing. Very wroth. Now, you know, you got to watch out for your anger. Don't lose your temper. I don't know why I'm talking to you about that. I should be telling myself, don't lose your temper. Hang on to yourself. Keep yourself some self-control, what have you. But at least when I got angry, something happened. Just ask my kids. If I got, you know, they say never spank your kids out of anger. I'm telling you, it works better that way. They learn to fear that spanking. Now, you're right. You probably shouldn't, because you can overdo it. But anger can at least wake you up and get you to move. You know, sometimes you just got to get a little bit angry. In fact, we ought to be angry about some things. I'm angry when I see these school shootings. I'm angry when I see those kids on the milk cartons. I go into Walmart and I see all these missing kids. Makes me angry. It ought to make you angry. And if we've got anybody in power somewhere, they ought to get angry about some stuff and fix it. They ought to fix it. Now, David got angry because his firstborn son had raped his daughter. But he didn't do anything. And this was not the only time David acted like that. There have been many other times. David was in some ways an incompetent administrator. And he wasn't a very close father. And that's just been the case. This is one of the great lessons we're going to learn from this whole story. A lot of great men are not very good fathers. And that's a shame. And I would say you'd be better off to be a mediocre man and a great father than a great man and a mediocre father. Because you don't have to be a horrible man, a horrible, you know, leader and be a great father. You can still be a pretty decent leader and be a great father. You can be a good pastor and a great father. But to be a great pastor and you feel like you have to be a poor father, not a good choice. Not a good choice. So, why do you think Absalom stewed for all these years, angry and hating, and very self-disciplined, by the way, didn't let anybody know? He hated Amnon. He let Jonadab know, his friend, he knew. And he hated Amnon, but he kept it in. And Amnon wasn't even clear on it. Because he invites Amnon to a feast. Let's go to there. Look, we're back in 2 Samuel chapter 13. Look at verse 23. And it came to pass after 2 full years. Let's do a little bit of the timeline. 2 full years here, Amnon rapes his sister, and Absalom hates him, and that's 2 full years Absalom waits. Then he kills Amnon, and he goes to he goes into exile for 3 years. Then he's invited back by the king, and he's 2 full years in Jerusalem without seeing his father's face. So that's 7 years there, and then there's another space of time when he begins to prepare a conspiracy. So you see the timeline. This is not a tremendous amount of time, but it's at least 7 years going on right here. Here's where that timeline starts. After 2 full years that Absalom had sheep shearers in Baal Hazor, which is beside Ephraim, and Absalom invited all the king's sons. And Absalom came to the king and said, "Behold, now thy servant hath sheep shearers. Let the king, I beseech thee, and his servants go with thy servant." And the king said to Absalom, "Nay, my son, let us not all now go, lest we be chargeable unto thee." And he pressed him, howbeit he would not go but blessed him. Now, I want you to notice, Absalom didn't just invite Amnon. Probably Amnon would have suspected something, so he... But he didn't invite Amnon alone. He invited all the king's sons, but he didn't just invite the king's sons. He invited the king also. Now, I don't know whether he had plans, bigger plans at that time, or whether he just invited the king because he wanted it all done in front of the king. I don't know. I think it probably would have been worse for him. I wonder, it makes me suspicious, whether he didn't plan on killing all the king's sons and the king at the same time. This is entirely possible. He's angry. 2 straight years, the king does nothing to Amnon. Amnon is still the crown prince. He's still going to be made the king. He's still number one in succession order. And David, even though he's angry at him, hasn't displeased him. He hasn't told him, no, you're not going to get this. Now I'm mad at you, you're banished. He didn't banish Amnon. He banished Absalom. It's interesting. Actually, Absalom banished himself. He took off a running. I don't know why Absalom would have been afraid of David, because David didn't do anything to Amnon. Why would he do something to Absalom? It's like David was paralyzed. Paralyzed with wishful thinking, with, you know, wishful thinking is good enough. He was just paralyzed with these things. I don't know. It hurts me all over to think about it, how David messed this up. Now, keep reading. We're in 2 Samuel chapter 13. Then Absalom said, verse 26, "If not, I pray thee, let my brother Amnon go with us." And the king said unto him, "Why should he go with thee?" But Absalom pressed him that he let Amnon and all the king's son go with him. Now Absalom had commanded his servants, saying, "Mark ye now when Amnon's heart is merry with wine." You want another reason not to drink? "And when I say unto you, smite Amnon, then kill him. Fear not. Have not I commanded you? Be courageous and be valiant." And the servants of Absalom did unto Amnon as Absalom had commanded. Then all the king's sons arose, and every man gat him up on his mule and fled. Now here's what happens. Amnon and all the king's sons show up at this great party that Absalom's throwing, and he has servants armed and ready, and they go in there when they're a little bit drunk, and they go in there and they kill Amnon, the brother. Now, I personally don't have any problem with Absalom up to this point. I honestly think he had a real justification to do what he did. You might say, well, that's taking matters into his own hand and maybe it's overdoing it. I'm just angry enough at Amnon that I don't think he was overdoing it. I think Amnon deserved what he came to him and got what was coming to him. And Absalom up to this point, as far as I'm concerned, is acting honorably, unless he had intentions of killing all the king's sons and the king as well, and taking over the kingdom in that manner. If that was his plan, well, then of course, yeah, he has something to answer for himself there. Anyway, you find out that David hears about all these, they got word back and they said that all of his sons were killed. Wow. But Jonadab, which is Absalom's friend, and he happens to also be David's nephew, is in the palace when he gets this news, and Jonadab comes over to him and says, "No, King, I happen to know what's going on." He didn't tell him. He knew, but he didn't tell him in time. "I know what's going on. Absalom has hated Amnon, and the only person he would have killed is Amnon." And it turns out that that was true, and David got word. And then Absalom flees to Geshur, flees to Syria, and hides out there for 3 years. All right. This is the time of exile. Absalom flees to his maternal grandfather's kingdom in Syria. Look at 2 Samuel chapter 14 and verse 1. Now Joab, the son of Zeruiah, which is David's sister. Zeruiah is David's sister. Joab is his nephew. Perceived that the king's heart was toward Absalom. And Joab sent to Tekoa and fetched thence a wise woman. All right, just notice, Joab notices that David misses Absalom. Now, think about it. It looks to me like Absalom now is the crown prince. He's the one in line. Amnon is dead. He's the oldest. Since we don't know anything about Daniel or Chileab, that second son that was born, and he's never mentioned again in the scripture, he's either dead or he's not viable. So Absalom is the crown prince now, and David misses him. Now, I want you to think about it. David is just a real, he's an emotional, soft-hearted guy, and doesn't always think real clear, but it appears to me that David kind of realizes that he didn't do what he was supposed to do in taking care of Amnon, and so he kind of, like I do, justifies Absalom in what he did, and he wants to fix it and bring Absalom back and solve the problem, but he can't. He doesn't know how to overlook murder. He can overlook rape. It's just a woman. Yeah, I know it doesn't sound right. Doesn't sound good at all, but that's just the way they were. They didn't treat women the same way they treated men. They'll have something to answer for in that, but that's okay. We have to let people be who they are. God has to do the judging. You got problems yourself. Don't judge them too stiffly. But one way or the other, he didn't judge Amnon. He didn't punish Amnon for raping his sister, but he would have had to have punished Absalom for killing Amnon. Now, I personally would, you know, make a different judgment on that. I would say Amnon was completely out of order and Absalom was pretty much justified. That's my judgment on the case. And so, but you have to understand, in politics and in trying to deal with people, you've got to do the right thing. And if you're a judge in the courts, you got to make decisions based on what the law says. And so, yeah, he had a problem. He had a difficulty, but it was within his power to just say it's over with. He waited 3 years and Joab realized we can fix this. So he concocts this scheme to bring this woman in. We're not going to read it. Brings this woman in. She talks David into having a little bit of mercy on this guy, Absalom. So David allows him to come back, but then won't speak to him. All right. I just want you to notice some suspicious behavior of Absalom, Jonadab, and Joab, all three of them. And it supports the assumption that David's government is rife with incompetence and possible conspiracies. And Joab has other reasons to distrust David because David has tried to undermine Joab on a couple of occasions, most notably with Abner. Remember, Abner was the captain of the host for Ishbosheth, Saul's son. And when David was reigning in Hebron and Ishbosheth was reigning in Jerusalem, Abner was the champion for Ishbosheth. And as soon as David got a chance, he made a league with Abner and was going to cut Joab out of the captain of the host. He says, you're going to be the captain. And Joab was upset at Abner for having killed his brother in a battle, folks. It's not a fair thing of Joab, but Joab got wind that Abner was going to be taking his place, and he went and killed him. So Joab has reason to distrust David. And Jonadab, which is Joab's cousin, and then of course you got Absalom. All of these people have these plans against David. It looks to me like there's a lot of suspicious behavior going on. For example, in chapter 14, verse 21, notice this. The king said unto Joab, behold, now I have done this thing. Go therefore, bring the young man Absalom again. And Joab fell to the ground on his face, bowed himself, thanked the king. Joab said, today thy servant knoweth that I have found grace in thy sight, my lord, O king, and that the king hath fulfilled the request of his servant. So Joab arose and went to Geshur and brought Absalom to Jerusalem. Joab was really mixed in with Absalom. Joab had something going on with Absalom, and it was before that, and Jonadab had something going on with Absalom. It looks to me like there was a conspiracy already afoot, already going in place long before all this stuff happened, and Joab is bringing Absalom back for a reason. It's what it looks like to me. Anyway, I've got a couple minutes. Now we get into the time of the conspiracy. I want you to look at the timeline just quickly. I'll wrap it up on the timeline. The Bible says in 2 Samuel chapter 5, it says that David was 30 years old when he began to reign in Hebron. He reigned 7.5 years in Hebron and 33 years in Jerusalem. Absalom was born in Hebron, and that was sometime after David turned 30. Tamar was a grown woman when she was raped. And Absalom had his own house, so he was also grown up. Whether he was older or younger than Tamar, not really clear. Now look at 2 Samuel 13, well, you don't have to go there. We've already read it. It was 2 years after Tamar's rape that Absalom kills Amnon. Then he was in Geshur for 3 years, and then he was 2 years in Jerusalem without having seen David. So that's 7 years. Now look at 2 Samuel chapter 15 and verse 7. 15 and verse 7. It came to pass after 40 years. What? This is a huge problem. You'll find in modern versions, they change it to 4 years. Because 40 years, where do you get 40 years? You can't have 40 years. 40 years is the entire time David reigned. There's no 40 years to be had. So when you're trying to find a timeline, so what did Josephus guess that it meant four? Or maybe some people before Josephus, and Josephus just repeating their guess. But in Josephus, we find that it was only 4 years after that, making a total of 11 years. Since there were 33 years reign in Jerusalem, they want to divide it up into three sections of 11. Doesn't matter. This 11 comes out of another section, so it doesn't really matter. They're trying too hard. They say this 40 years is a mistake. It's a copyist's mistake. So new versions will change it. New International Version, where they change it to 4 years based on Josephus. And of course, some Septuagint manuscripts and some Syriac manuscripts follow Josephus in that. But there's not one Hebrew manuscript that says four. All of them say 40. Clearly, the statement is 40. And you say, well, how can this be? It can't be Absalom's age. It can't be David's age. The only possible, Gill makes this suggestion, John Gill, the commentator, he makes a suggestion that it's talking about the time of the kingdom. It's at the reign of the kingdom, starting with King Saul's reign. There's a lot of problems with that, because over there in Acts chapter 13, Paul says that Saul reigned by the space of 40 years, which also is a problem, because it can't be. Saul could not have reigned 40 years. So they're thinking that even that means the time of the kingdom, the 40-year space of the kingdom, starting with the anointing of Saul. And so this is when that 40-year point comes in. The timeline shows that it was just that 7 years plus a little bit more. Modern versions will say four more years. They have no basis for that. They're just guessing. But one way or the other, that's how it comes out. But several times, for example, right there in chapter 14, verse 21, you'll read it. Chapter 14, 21 says, "And the king said unto Joab, Behold, now I have done this thing. Go therefore and bring the young man Absalom again." He's called young man like a half a dozen times in all of this thing. Absalom is still a young man at this time. Now, all that is very interesting to me. The fact that all this stuff happens in this space of time, right after he's gotten his kingdom up there in Jerusalem, and then Absalom begins this conspiracy. I suspect the conspiracy was afoot before, and I suspect Joab was a part of it. I don't have any proof of that. Joab did not follow him at the end, but Ahithophel did, and so it was a pretty strong conspiracy. We'll get into the conspiracy next week. Hopefully I can finish it out next week, because I don't want to drag it into next February. So pray for me. There are seven chapters dealing with Absalom, chapter 13 through 19. You guys can give them a read if you want, see if you see what I see.